live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks.
Sleep, sleep, sleep.
Looks like a walking corpse. Begah!
From the Poly Market Studio in LA, it's the Young Turks. Cenk Ugrinanik, Kasparian with you guys. Amazing show ahead. So we got news on Biden. We got news, comical news as usual, on Donald Trump, the Stormy Daniels testimony, and on and on it goes. So, Casper, take it away.
We begin with Joe Biden's interview with Aaron Burnett. He touched on the economy. Let's get into the details.
On the economy, he was very defensive. Said he's already turned it around.
But that's not the way people are experiencing the economy. They're experiencing it through the lens of the cost of living. And he is a man who's built his career on empathy. Mm. Why not lead with the empathy?
Some harsh critique from David Axelrod in regard to how President Joe Biden handled himself in discussing the economy with CNN's Aaron Burnett. Now, keep in mind, Axelrod used to work closely with Biden and Obama during the Obama administration. But here's what Biden said that Axelrod felt wasn't really a good way of handling messaging as it pertains to the economy. Let's watch.
Why should people here believe that you will succeed at creating jobs where Trump failed?
He's never succeeded in creating jobs, and I've never failed. I've created over 15 million jobs just since I've been president. 15 million in three and three quarters years. Trump is, he started off with the golden shovels, you know.
For the groundbreaking.
And talked about this being, you know, the eighth wonder of the world. When has he ever done anything he said? I'm not being facetious. Think about it. He started off, he lost, other than Herbert Hoover, he's the only other president who lost more jobs than created in his 4-year term.
Yeah, so Biden has two giant problems. One is on the things he's good at, which is jobs, which I'll break down in a second. He's just a terrible communicator. The interviewer there almost has to help him and prod him to get to the right talking point. And does he make it forcefully? I mean, he can't speak forcefully at all. And then, of course, he's got the second problem, which is that he's ignoring the elephant in the room in terms of why people are struggling with this economy. So the good news is he has created 15 million jobs. That's true. He has averaged over 400,000 jobs a month, which is astounding. Now, a lot of that was recovering from the pandemic. That's true. But what he says about Trump is not exactly right. We've explained that before on the show. Trump created about 180,000 jobs per month, which is actually a really good number before the pandemic hit. But even after we got back to the pre-pandemic job numbers, totally stabilized under Biden, you're not just re-adding the same jobs. At that point, Biden has still added 280,000 jobs per month. That's 100,000 better than Donald Trump. Have you heard that before? My guess is that you've never heard that fact before, because the Biden team doesn't know how to get out a message if their life depended on it. Maybe all of our political lives depend on it. He cannot forcefully make a point. The second problem is, as we're gonna point out here a lot, the prices have gone up for food, healthcare, and housing. So these are huge problems, especially mortgage rates on houses. But he doesn't address that at all.
No, he doesn't.
And I'm gonna tell you in a little bit the three things he could have done about those three issues that would have made a giant difference. But instead, he's pretending that those problems don't exist, which is a terrible idea.
When it comes to the general election, the only thing that matters is how independents are gonna vote. If you are a self-professed or if you're a self-identified Democrat, you're gonna vote for Biden. If you are identifying as a Republican, chances are you're gonna vote for Trump. So how do you appeal to the independents? I would venture to say you don't appeal to them by lying to them and insulting their intelligence. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is Biden has actually done great when it comes to jobs. So if he wants to tout his jobs numbers, that's fine. But don't start it with a lie about Trump's job numbers. So let me give you the details and please bear with me. You can absolutely despise Trump, that's fine. But just hang on as I give you all the details, because Biden does have room to brag about his job numbers. So PolitiFact actually did a deep dive into jobs numbers under the Trump administration versus the Biden administration. And one thing I can't stand is when Democrats lie about how, oh, Trump has the worst jobs record of all time, you know, comparable to Hoover's administration. Well, we're talking about the Great Depression when we're referring to Hoover, and when it came to Trump, it was the global pandemic that led to businesses shutting down, which is what Democrats wanted, and what Democrats wanted to be in place for a longer period of time. Okay, so the shutdowns initially was the right thing to do, but that wasn't Donald Trump's fault. A bunch of people did get laid off. To blame that on Trump, I think, is unfair. Employment under Trump was positive until the economy lost 20.5 million jobs in April of 2020, as efforts to slow the spread of the novel coronavirus led to business closures and layoffs. By the time Trump left office in January of 2021, employment had partly rebounded, but was still 9.4 million jobs below the February 2020 peak, according to the official figures from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Now, keep this in mind. The average monthly job growth under Trump was 180,000 jobs per month before the pandemic hit. Okay, now let's look at Biden's numbers, because believe it or not, Biden actually created more jobs on average per month, and he didn't need to lie about the pandemic. Okay, so by June of 2022, employment hit and slightly surpassed the pre-pandemic peak. Since then, the job growth under Biden has been an average of 282,000 per month. That's still 100,000 more than the pre-pandemic average under Trump. So he doesn't even need to lie. If he wants to brag about job numbers, he doesn't even need to lie, but he does it anyway, and it drives me crazy. The dishonesty drives me crazy. But there's also the second half that you alluded to, Cenk, that you touched on. Listen, it's great that there's more jobs available, but the quality of those jobs also deeply matter. Because if your wages and your salary is not keeping up with inflation, then you are struggling. You're experiencing a pay cut in real time. And people are frustrated about that. So when they hear the president of the United States tell them, the economy is doing great, I give myself a pat on the back, everything is fantastic, they feel frustrated about that messaging. So that is where Axelrod, I believe, is coming from when he says Biden should lead with empathy and help Americans understand that he understands that the inflation is in fact crushing them.
First, another caveat that's important. The president doesn't unilaterally control the economy. The head of the Federal Reserve makes a bigger difference than the president does. We talked about that in good times, bad times, Republican and Democratic presidents alike. In this case, are Biden and Jerome Powell, the head of the Federal Reserve, doing something to curb inflation? Yes, they raised interest rates. Now, which creates other problems, but they are doing a lot to curb inflation, and they have curbed it better than a lot of the rest of the world. Now, having said that, guys, it's not enough because people are getting crunched by these numbers. In fact, one of our viewers wrote in with exactly that. Jesus Take the Wheel said the cost of living has exploded under the Biden presidency, and wages haven't kept up. Everyone's quality of life has gone down. Why is this so complicated for rich people in Washington, D.C.? So I love doing the show with the members, tyt.com/team to become a member or hit the join button below. Now, that's a great point, and that's what Biden is missing. So the prices are up. Now, here are the three things he could have done on the three major areas where they're up. On food, he could have gone out there, and it's not too late to do any of these things. It would have been better at the peak, but it still can be done. and talk about price gouging that the food companies are doing. Because as we've reported here, during their shareholder meetings, the CEOs gladly admit, oh yeah, it turns out the market could absorb these higher prices, and it's not necessarily related to our employee costs at all. We're just jacking up the prices because we can. And on Wall Street, they brag about that. So why not call out their price gouging? Make it, I mean, what would be perfect is if you actually fought for the average man. But if you can't do that, I mean, that's policy, and that's 1,000 times more important. But on politics, don't you have enough sense to at least pretend to fight for the average guy? To come out there and say, I can't believe they're doing price gouging. Look at what they said in their shareholder meeting. Well, I'm gonna get the sons of bitches. You know, with Biden and the corporate Democrats, they're not gonna get the sons of bitches. Okay, but come on, you can't even do bare minimum politics right. Housing, the private equity guys are buying up all the houses and driving the prices up. Interest rates are killing us, etc. He hasn't said a word about that. What are you doing, Joe Biden?
I know.
What are you doing? And actually doing something about the private equity guys would be infinitely better. But those are a lot of his funders, so he's not gonna do that.
You're so right about the private equity firms buying up residential real estate and how there has been no effort on a federal level to do something about that. Because we were already experiencing a severe housing shortage. And then you have, you know, the haves, like the private equity firms and the wealthy, buying up the limited housing that's available, turning it into rentals, and then serving as slumlords in this country. So that's a problem. The other problem is, Cenk, I remember when both Texas and Florida started to pursue bans on foreigners buying up real estate in their states, right? They wanted to protect properties for American citizens and stop allowing oligarchs and business people from China from parking their money in real estate here with no intention of actually living here. Democrats called them racist for doing that.
Yeah, of course it's because of the funding. Everything is about the funding. So which goes to the last example, healthcare. So Joe Biden said that he was going to introduce a public option. Look, introducing things has no cost at all, because he introduced a whole bunch of progressive things that he got tons of credit from the media, tons of credit from progressives, even including Bernie Sanders and Just Democrats, etc. And he didn't do 85% of them. But on the public option, he didn't even propose it, even though he said he would. Public option can drive down healthcare prices, but he won't do the bare minimum. And then instead, they're like, no, Donald Trump is evil, you have to vote for us. It is a very poor political strategy. Even if that's true and you believe it to be true, and I think Donald Trump is terrible, not sure that Biden's a great guy either, but even if you believe that it's true, it's not a winning strategy to keep saying, he bad, me good. You have to prove it, because people feel the pain of those prices.
Now, Cenk, you and I have talked about some of the polls, both nationally as it pertains to the general election, and also polls that focus specifically on the critical battleground states, the swing states. And the polls don't look good for Biden. Okay, it is unfortunate for Democrats, it's unfortunate for Biden. But Aaron Burnett asked him in this interview, do you think he could turn things around? And I thought his answer was fascinating. Let's watch.
It's also true right now, Mr. President, that voters by a wide margin trust Trump more on the economy. They say that in polls. And part of the reason for that may be the numbers. And you're aware of many of these, of course. The cost of buying a home in the United States is double what it was when you look at your monthly costs from before the pandemic. Real income, when you account for inflation, is actually down since you took office.
Look at the Michigan survey. For 65% of American people think they're in good shape economically. They think the nation's not in good shape, but they're personally in good shape. The polling data has been wrong all along.
The polling data has been wrong all along, which doesn't inspire a lot of confidence moving forward in this general election. Because if Biden is convincing himself that the polls are just wrong and that he doesn't need to change course on anything, well, then he's not gonna change course on anything. And I am concerned about that.
Yeah, so one of our members just pointed out, at least his eyes were open, and that's rare in an interview. And he had one fact that he was ready to deliver, and he delivered it. So That's actually, the bar for Biden is so low that when he just like takes one step over a bar on the ground, we're like, yay.
Hey, his eyes are open.
His eyes are open. Okay. So now, having said that, you know who says that polls are wrong? Losers. Here, let me show you an example.
Just remember, what you're seeing and what you're reading is not what's happening. No, because we have great internal polling. There were fake polls that were released by somebody that is, it's ridiculous. No, we are winning in every single state that we've polled. We're winning in Texas very big. We're winning in Ohio very big. We're winning in Florida very big.
Yeah, well, at least the last part was, yeah, you're winning in Texas. That doesn't really prove anything. Okay, but one guy's like, oh, every poll that's against me is a fake poll. And now Biden is saying a slightly more sophisticated version of that, which is, I don't believe any of the polls. Well, brother, that movie doesn't end well. It didn't end well for Trump. It didn't end well for Mitt Romney, who kept saying that the polls were wrong. It doesn't end well here for Joe Biden either. So you're denying reality. The reality is you are definitely behind in the polls. And there's a good reason for that. And by the way, everybody always remember, the Democratic candidate has to win by 5 in the popular vote in order to win the Electoral College because of the insane system that we have. So when you see Biden on average down by about 4 or 5, that means he's actually down by 9 or 10. It's an absolute epic disaster. But there's an egomaniac in charge. No, not Trump, Biden. They're both egomaniacs. But this egomaniac thinks, any poll that shows that I'm not winning must be wrong by definition. Everyone tells me that my poop doesn't stink around here. And everybody kisses my ass in Washington. So it must not stink. I am the greatest. I don't care what numbers or science says. Good luck with that strategy. It literally never works.
All right. Well, when we come back from the break, we'll talk a little more about the electoral dysfunction that we have in this country with Democrats basically scratching their heads over some of the recent polling showing that independent voters find a surprising candidate a real threat to democracy. We'll give you the details on that and more when we come back.
Read the polls. Read the polls, Jack.
All right, back on TYT, Cenk and Anna with you guys. I want to do a quick correction on a story that we did some months ago. There was a company that was doing ratings of different news agencies called AdFontis. And there was one thing that we got wrong in there because we got it from Crunchbase, and Crunchbase had it wrong. So we said that they were funded by Aon Partners. In fact, they were funded by Aon Ventures. And since AdFontis also acknowledges they had not corrected Crunchbase's wrong information. But I wanted you guys to make sure that you knew what was the reality. So we had issues with how they rated the different news companies, and we'll go back to that and discuss it in other cases. But when we had issues with their investors, those were not the right investors, and I wanted to make sure you guys were aware of that. Second thing I want to address real quick is I will not be taking Ben Glebe off the air, okay? So for all of you who say, oh, you know, we don't like his opinions, or we think that his facts are not exactly right, on the issue of Israel and Gaza, no one even agrees on facts. So, and Ben is, when he's on the show, is challenged by me and other hosts. You get to have both sides. You can see for yourself very clearly. I know some people say he was at UCLA during the violence there, but we checked. He was reporting from there. He did not participate in the violence. A giant, giant difference. I would never fire a reporter who was on either side covering either set of protests. So if that's what you're looking for, we're not going to do that. We are going to have diversity of opinion on this network, open minds, open hearts, and I absolutely insist on it. So, and by the way, if you think you're gonna find a more pro-Palestinian, more pro-peace network, if you think we haven't been tough enough on Israel, okay. It is what it is, then I guess we don't agree. Look, I get that people are saying it because they're deeply concerned. So I'm not trying to minimize that. But I'm telling you what our policy is, and I'm telling you what I'm willing to do and what I'm not willing to do. Okay, so that I would hate it if a network took all the pro-Palestinian voices off their network, right, which is very common. I don't want to do likewise in the opposite direction.
And this is gonna come up, I'm sure, in other contexts over and over again, because we're not a company of five people, we're a company of dozens of people. And so you hire people to do on-air work, eventually you're gonna come across a story where they have a differing opinion from the audience or from the majority of hosts, and is the right ethical thing to do to immediately fire them because you disagree with their opinion. I just find that deeply immoral. Now, if Ben Glieb was involved with the counter protesters or did anything wrong, that would be different. But there's no evidence of him doing that. He was there filming what was going on. And if you watch the videos that he posted, he even loudly condemns, as they say, something terrible to the protesters at UCLA, the pro-Palestinian protesters. So, and then final thing that I want to mention, Cenk, and yes, it is related to Ben, but it's related to other, you know, issues as they've come up in the past and I'm sure will come up in the future. Look, I'm the executive producer of this show. There's the business side of the company and then there's the content side. The only thing I have control over is the content of the main show. What stories are we gonna cover? What kind of elements are we gonna gather to help our storytelling? Who has hiring and firing abilities here, Cenk? Do I?
No, only I do.
Okay, so get off my ass about who gets hired and who gets fired, okay? It's not my business, I have no control over it, and I'm sick of getting blamed for everything that happens.
Yeah, look, I know, it's a couple people. It's okay.
It's annoying as hell.
I got it. People have questions, we just answer them. God bless. And then everybody can do what they want with that information. But you see here, we have a dedication to open minds, open hearts. We're gonna be in favor of decency and sanity, and we're gonna do it together as a community. And I don't bend when it comes to protecting those principles. So, and then again, if you look at it and you go, hey, that's for me, I like that a lot, that's what I want, great. If you say, no, I don't want that, I just want only one side or whatever it might be, okay, no problem. And I'm not saying that the critics of Ben have said that. I'm just saying what our policy is, and then obviously you make a decision any way that you like. We've gone through this hundreds of times, now feels like hundreds, probably dozens in reality, dozens of times where people have challenged us to do this or that, only cover things in one way or another way. And we try to give you the truth, no matter what, pleasant or not, to the best of our abilities. All of us. All right, Anna, let's do the stories.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about some shocking results in the latest poll having to do with the election.
Another thing interesting in this polling was more independents said that they worry about President Biden weakening democracy than Trump, 53% to 42%. What do you make of this?
I find it shocking, honestly. I can't, you know, make sense of that number.
The woman that you just heard from, by the way, is a Republican strategist who is shocked by the results of this latest NPR, PBS NewsHour, and Marist poll. And what it found, the most shocking result of this poll, was that a majority of independent voters somehow see Biden as more of a threat to democracy than Donald Trump. So overall, 46% said that a Biden second term would weaken democracy, while 48% said the same about Trump returning to the White House. So overall, if you poll voters across the ideological spectrum, you know, a slim majority do believe that Trump is more of a threat. But then once you go to independent voters, that's where the shocking results are. Among independents, 53% believe Biden will weaken democracy, while only 42% believe the same about Trump. And remember that independents tend to be the ones who decide general elections. Much of Trump and Biden's likability in polling comes down to political party allegiances, leaving 2024 to likely be decided by independents, especially those living in critical battleground states like Wisconsin and Michigan. So I want to just go to the Republican strategist who's guessing as to why independent voters feel this way. Let's take a look.
You know, this trial's not on TV. You guys do a great job reporting what's happening, but if there aren't those images coming out of the courthouse, people feel like they know this story. We've heard about it for a long time, so it doesn't surprise me that they're not interested.
So that was Susan Del Percio, and she didn't quite say what I think she meant to say, but Cenk, I think that what she's trying to get at is the whole threat to democracy narrative has been uttered by the Democratic side over and over and over and over again for several years now. And I think it might have lost its impact on voters.
Yeah, so there's a couple of reasons why I think it's happening. So number one, remember, a lot of Republicans, but also a ton of independents, don't watch mainstream media anymore. And so mainstream media is basically saying right there, as you saw with your own eyes, like, I don't get it. We've been telling everybody that Trump's the bad guy. Why don't, but now you guys tell us that Biden's a threat to democracy. We never even said that. Yeah, you didn't say that, but other people said it all over social media and all over other forms of media. And these knuckleheads are never gonna get that people aren't watching them to the degree that they used to be. So honestly, the average age of a cable news viewer is around 69 years old, almost 70. So some channels, some networks are above 70. So they think that the whole country's watching them. The whole country is not watching them. So it's gonna take them decades to get that through their thick heads. So in terms of why people might think that Biden's a bigger threat, there's a great number of reasons. There's the smallest one, which is that in the primaries, the Democrats kill democracy, and they did it again this time to benefit Biden. But that's not a story that I think got out that much. That's why I say I think it's the smallest one. But what do people hear? Well, everyone covers what Trump is saying, and everyone would cover what Biden is saying if he said it in an interesting way or a loud way. So what Trump says 24/7 is they are doing all these trials because they're trying to rig the elections against me. He says that a billion times. Mm-hmm. It drills into every American's head because one of the leading candidates, a very, very loud guy, says it so often. Biden, on the other hand, barely speaks. He can barely open his eyes, he can barely open his mouth. Mm-hmm. So he never has any agenda that he ever points out forcefully, right? Mm-hmm. So now there's a huge disparity between the two candidates. So they're caught in a world that doesn't exist anymore, where they could just, now in this case, they're actually factually correct. Donald Trump is a way bigger threat to democracy. I think he tried to end democracy last time around. But the Democrats and Joe Biden have to make that case in a way that is convincing. They can't just assume that the voters must do what they told them to do.
Yeah, I think that, as we've talked about before, there's a difference in the independent voters of today versus the independent voters from 20 years ago. Back in the day, independent voters were referred to as the low information voters. That's not the case anymore. A lot of independents used to be partisan, but they decided to re-register as independents because they've been unhappy with both sides of the political aisle. And they're actually very much tuned in to what's going on in the country and what's going on in the realm of politics. And so I wonder, and this is my speculation, I don't have data to back this up, but I do wonder, what percentage of these independent voters have looked at what transpired during the Democratic primary? And they're like, wait a minute, you guys are claiming that Trump is anti-democratic, which, you know, there is evidence to that. But what about what the Democrats are doing? How come we don't get another option or at least a robust primary as part of this election process?
Look, I wish people paid a lot more attention for personal reasons, let alone political and policy reasons, to what happened in the Democratic primary. But as I said earlier, that's probably a small part of it. That mm-hmm. That didn't get a lot of news in almost any news in mainstream media, but also not a lot of news in social media and other forms of media, unfortunately, right? But guys, there's one other giant factor here, and this one I'm not so sure about either in terms of how much it affects people. Feels more subconscious, but maybe people are starting to, especially independents, think it consciously, which is the establishment hates democracy too. They serve their corporate donors. And so do we really have a democracy? Those donors pick who the candidate is every time. So that's probably, I doubt that people have got to a point where they're consciously thinking that, and they're thinking Biden is the more establishment candidate. The establishment loves money in politics, totally ruled by the donors, not really a democracy anymore. But subconsciously, yeah, Biden's the more establishment candidate and they hate the establishment. And that is the number one defining quality of an independent these days. And the Democrats, just since they are the establishment, along with the corporate Republicans, they cannot get it through their head. They just think, no, I bet the people love the establishment. They don't. And that's what these numbers show with independents.
The story just broke and we're gonna cover it, but I have to tell you what it is. Lindsey Graham says he trusts Israel more than America's own Secretary of Defense.
Yeah, he's a traitor. We'll definitely do that a little bit later.
That is, wow. Look, I'm not a huge fan of our Secretary of Defense, but wow. Okay, anyway, let's move on to our next story. That's amazing.
Yeah, later in the program, we'll cover that story a little bit more fully.
All right, let's move on to our next topic. Hold on, sorry guys.
Can I just say one quick thing about what that lady said as you're getting that ready? Mm-hmm. The other thing that's a little bit off topic, but she said there needs to be the TVs in the courtroom, otherwise people are kind of tired of the topic. If they see Trump and Stormy Daniels, they'll all watch. But if not, you're not gonna get these messages across. She's totally right. And I know a lot of people in DC who think, oh, it's a good thing there aren't TVs in the courtroom. I bet this helps Biden.
What? Why would anyone think that's such a dumb thing to think?
It's unbelievable. They're just so wrong about everything.
Jeez.
It would hurt Trump so much if there were cameras in the courtroom. Please put cameras in the courtroom. But in the federal cases, they won't have it either. Because I want the independents and American people to see what Trump actually did. So Stormy Daniels case, fine, sure, he broke the law there. But especially on the fake elector case, the coup case, because I don't think that they know it at all. I think that they barely know about the fake electors. They think January 6th was all about a bunch of yahoos rioting in Congress. Mm-hmm. I think people would be shocked if you did a poll and asked about fake electors, how few people know it. And that's
no,
the real
point.
The Democrats suck. They're so bad at messaging.
It's not just that, it is the Democrats, yes. Because look, the Democrats and the media wanted to hyper focus on what the spectacle was. And the spectacle were the riots on January 6th, right? Ooh, good video, good video. You know how broadcast media is. Like, they want video. And if there's no video to help tell the story, they don't really care as much about it. But you're right. When it comes to what Trump tried to do in overturning the results of the election, it was less about the riots and actually a lot more about the scheming that took place behind the scenes with the fake electors. But you're right, most people, I don't think, are fully aware of that, and that's an issue. Let's move on to delegates. This is fascinating. Let's take a little trip to Florida. Barron Trump, Donald Trump's youngest son, has been selected as a Florida delegate for the Republican National Convention. And that's according to a list that they released just yesterday. And he's not the only Trump family member who has now been named a delegate. Now, a Trump campaign official confirmed the report to ABC News saying, quote, yes, he's on the delegation roster and Barron is very interested in our nation's political process. He's 18. He just graduated high school. And so he might be super interested in our political process. A little bit of a conflict of interest here. Now, he's not the only one in the Trump family who's now a Florida delegate. Let's take a look at the list. You also have Eric Trump, Donald Trump Jr. You have Kimberly Guilfoyle, Tiffany Boulos, Michael Boulos, Barron Trump. Pam Bondi is not related to Donald Trump, but is a huge fan of Donald Trump's as a Republican politician. But nonetheless, you see a lot of names on that list who come from the Trump family. Eric Trump will also serve as the delegation chair, meaning he'll place his father's name in for the nomination. And Kimberly Guilfoyle will serve on the platform committee. Ivanka and her husband, Jared Kushner, were absent from the list, saying that she would stay away from her father's reelection bid. And it seems like she has actually committed to doing that. So for now, Ivanka Trump and her husband have not really been involved in the election process. According to Ballotpedia, delegates are individuals who choose to represent their state at the party's national nominating convention. They are either selected in primary and caucus contests or included because of their position as an elected representative or member of the party leadership. So is this something to be concerned about, Cenk? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so it's not concerning. I don't really care who Donald Trump's delegates are. And if he needs them, he'll just have fake delegates anyway. Okay, so fake electors, fake delegates, et cetera. But I was given to understand that like discussing Barron Trump in the context of politics was like the most egregious thing in the world. And now, giant difference, I know, he just turned 18 as opposed to back when people were talking about him and he was 11 or whatever he was. And that's when Donald Trump and Melania Trump got all verklempt. And I get it, I totally get it. But at the time, I don't remember exactly what they said, but they said that he also had some sort of developmental issue or something.
I don't
remember what it was, guys, sorry. But they were like, oh my God, especially because of that, you can't ever talk about this kid. But apparently he's okay now. So because he's gonna be a delegate and he's super into politics. And by the way, if you've seen the pictures, approximately 8 feet tall.
He's really tall, you're right, because Trump is tall. And then you see pictures of Trump standing next to Barron, you're like, oh my God, Barron is super tall. But look, I have not heard a peep from Barron Trump. Like, I genuinely don't know what his views are on any political issues. All I know is he is the youngest son of former President Donald Trump. And the one thing I'm a little bit concerned about is, did he get pushed in this direction? Is he really political, right? And if he is really political and he's got some, you know, points that he wants to make, then no holds barred, of course, you know, he's not a kid anymore. But yeah. I've gotten no indication that this kid, or this kid, he's an adult now, yes, that he's like deeply involved and interested in politics, but who knows, maybe he is.
Yeah, so look, I don't really care about him at all, to be honest, like one way or another. If it turns out he's into politics and he's amazing at it, great, wonderful, who cares? If it turns out he's got the, I was gonna say the wrong end of the gene pool, but is there a right end of the Trump gene pool? Okay, so then that'll be very normal. That'll be like Eric and Don Jr. Mm-hmm. And et cetera. The only interesting part of the story to me is, well, two things. One is just like a personal curiosity. The other one's slightly relevant. The personal curiosity is, like, has Donald Trump spent any time with this kid?
I know.
Right? Like, I've never seen him in anything. Like, has he done a round of golf with him? He loves golf, right? Has he taught him how to play? Has he watched a ball game with him? Like, you never ever hear those stories. And maybe they do, and they just don't publicize it. I'd be really surprised. Another thing that was slightly surprising was that, hey, Tiffany's back. Tiffany's also a delegate.
Oh, okay. That's who Boulos is.
Yes.
I'm like, wait, who's Tiffany Boulos again?
That's really funny, even you forgot. That's Tiffany Trump, she got married to what sounds like a Greek dude. He's a delegate. Their dog's a delegate, their cat's a delegate, the fly in their house is a delegate. That's the only relevant part of the story. Okay, by the way.
And the donors, there's some donors in
there. Yeah, in case you're a fact checker, the animals are not actually delegates, okay? So anyways, so this used to be a real process with people who actually cared about politics and then they would go to the conventions and they would have a vote and they would have a voice and it was important. Now it's just a circus anyway, right? So since the conventions are a circus, the whole, all the politics is a circus. Oh, so you brought a kid along. Okay, does he fit into the clown car? Well, barely, he's so tall. Okay, but other than that, it's a joke. These delegates are a joke. They're stuffing it with their family members and their uncles and their dogs. It's hilarious. But just don't put Kristi Noem in there with the dog. There's no dog, by the way. There's no dog. And Kristi Noem's in South Dakota.
Yeah, I don't. And I don't think Trump would even want the dogs as delegates.
That's true. He's not a big fan of dogs or kids. Seems like a swell guy.
Yeah. Anyway, all right, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, we've got more news to get to, including one of the, in my opinion, most important stories today, having to do with some quid pro quo, some pay to play action taking place. Donald Trump is demanding something of his oil baron donors in return for tax cuts.
That's a great story.
That and more coming up, don't miss it.
That's what I do.
back on TYT. Cenk, Anna, and Lord Dice with us. Lord Dice just hit the join button on YouTube. Chris Smith and Mintman gifted 5 memberships on YouTube. You guys are awesome. So one quick note here, during the social break, I was just reading a comment about, oh, well, you wouldn't have a white supremacist on, etc. One, Anna, as Anna pointed out, you know, I had a lot of opinions that would have gotten me banned from this network if we were using the standard before. I used to be a Republican, so I'm not banning people based on that. On the white supremacy and going too far, guys, I've even interviewed those guys. I've interviewed QAnon guys, I've interviewed David Duke guys. Why? Because you need to know how they're thinking, what they're thinking, why they're thinking it, in order to counter it, in order to be able to understand where the other side is coming from. We cannot shut ourselves off from other opinions and perspectives. That's not the right intellectual way to conduct business. It also doesn't mean you have to make David Duke a host on the network, obviously bounds of reason. And there's lines there. And if you say, hey, I don't trust the way that you draw the lines, Cenk, okay, that's fair. So if there's somebody else you trust more, God bless, I hear you. All right, I'm not trying to say, you know, you're not welcome here. You're enormously welcome here. But I don't want people saying no. I get to control who's the host, whose opinions matter and are correct and should be on and shouldn't be on. So we're trying to have a broad range of opinions here. And by the way, we had such a broad range, we had Dave Rubin and Jimmy Dore on here, and they didn't turn out great, okay? But if you open up the range, sometimes you get people with opinions that wind up going south on you, right? Or right wing or whatever it is. But if you keep it this narrow, then you're just cable news. And there's no point in that.
An echo chamber, super yeah. Boring.
Yeah. Okay, let's do it, Anna. What's next?
All right. During a recent fundraising event, former President Donald Trump basically flat out told oil and gas executives that he would cut their taxes further if they managed to fundraise $1 billion for his campaign. I'm not kidding. This is a report from the Washington Post. They write that as Donald Trump sat down with some of the country's top oil executives at his Mar-a-Lago club last month, one executive complained about how they continue to face burdensome environmental regulations despite spending $400 million to lobby the Biden administration in the last year. Trump's incredibly blunt response apparently stunned some of the executives in the room. You are all wealthy enough, he said, that you should raise $1 billion to return me to the White House. At the dinner, he vowed to immediately reverse dozens of President Biden's environmental rules and policies and stop new ones from being enacted. Giving $1 billion would be a deal, Trump said, because of the taxation and regulation they would avoid thanks to him, according to the people. Now, attendees at this event included executives from the following oil and gas companies. You have ExxonMobil, EQT Corporation, Venture Global LNG, and the American Petroleum Institute, which lobbies for the oil industry. So, Cenk, this isn't really that surprising to us, because while a lot of people in this country unfortunately bought Trump's I'm gonna drain the swamp line, hook, line, and sinker, he did not drain the swamp. He's always been part of the swamp. And he did all sorts of favors for the swamp when he was in power, including the one policy that he accomplished, which were tax cuts for corporations and mostly the rich.
Yeah, I think this is telling us so many different levels. First of all, in terms of the personal corruption of Donald Trump, the guy is so brazen. I mean, it's, by the way,
shameless, I think, is a really good word, because yeah. I think most people would be a little bit shy about asking or demanding something in such a blunt way, but he's shameless. He's like, raise $1 billion for me. I'll give you your tax cuts, quid pro quo.
Yeah, and so this is why people accidentally think that he's honest, because he just says whatever's in the top of his mind. But oftentimes what's at the top of his mind is lies. But in this particular case, he's being authentic. He's saying, yeah, I'm a crook and a con man, and I want you to give me money, and then I will give you whatever you want. Is that gonna hurt the average American? Of course it is. Who gives a crap about the average American? I'll let you raise your oil price without worrying about a thing. I won't charge you anything extra for the oil that you take under American soil, right? Screw the American taxpayer who's gonna get that royalty or not. I'll make sure that we keep funneling $20 billion to you guys every year in subsidies. I'll make sure you can drill in the in Alaska, anywhere you like, offshore, deregulation up the gazoo. Anything you want is deregulated. I'll give you giant tax cuts. And he's not wrong when he says, look, it's a good deal. You guys are gonna make way more from this than $1 billion. And he's right, they're gonna make hundreds of billions of dollars on the tax cuts alone, let alone the deregulation. So it's telling about Trump, but it's also enormously telling about the system. What he's proposing is not illegal. It's actually very normal. He's just saying it at a bigger level and more frankly than other politicians. Other politicians will be sophisticated and they'll be like, well, we're looking forward to raising money and we know that you need innovation, and that is why we're deregulating your industry. Mm-hmm. And we know that lower taxes will lead to more jobs, right? And that's the sophisticated BS that they do on TV and New York Times and Washington Post. Trump, since he's a goofball and a buffoon, he's like, oh, you give me money, you give me $1 billion in bribes. It's legalized bribes, it's legal. You just give it to me, and then I give you 20, 100 billion back of American taxpayer money. Let's make a deal to screw over the Americans.
Okay, so hold on. Look, I find it immoral for sure. He's gonna get, I don't know if they're gonna be able to raise $1 billion for him, mm-hmm. but they're gonna raise a lot of money for him. So yeah. Like, is he a buffoon for knowing how the system works, knowing how corrupt it is, and taking full advantage of that?
Yeah, look, he doesn't know how to say it in a way where he has plausible deniability. That's what I mean by it.
Okay.
And don't get me wrong, I hate the plausible deniability. I hate how our politicians cover up their corruption and the mainstream media aids and abets them in covering up that corruption, right? But yeah, you're gonna get caught. That's what I mean by before. You're gonna get caught if you go, hey, give me money, and then I give you money even more, right? Hey, knucklehead, you're supposed to be a little bit more subtle about it.
I mean, the whole event, it's a fundraiser at Mar-a-Lago last month. The whole point of the event is favors for favors, okay? Legalized bribery, that's the whole point of the event. He just says it out loud when it doesn't really need to be said, and he puts an exact number on it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so, look, the last layer of this is exposes personal corruption and systemic corruption. But the third layer is, you see how all that talk about deregulation being freedom was BS, and about how lower taxes was for the average guy? No, lower corporate taxes is for corporate executives that were at that meeting. And deregulation is to rob you blind for those same executives. Freedom my ass. This is all about legalized bribery and the sick swamp that Trump would love to run.
And look, to be fair, Trump will deliver for the swamp, because if you look at his first term, he delivered big time for the swamp. So his administration weakened or wiped out more than 125 environmental rules and policies just over 4 years. These environmental rules and policies, guys, protect the water we drink, the air we breathe. This isn't just about let's help out the oil and gas companies. It's also about, hey, what Trump did puts our lives and our health in jeopardy. Trump's drill baby drill attitude is exactly what these corporations absolutely want to go back to, since Biden has been slightly less friendly to them. So far, Biden officials have overturned 27, just 27 out of the 125 environmental rules that Trump had done away with. And so 27 Trump actions affecting the fossil fuel industry, and completed 23 new actions affecting the sector, according to a Washington Post analysis. The Interior Department, for instance, recently blocked future oil drilling across 13 million acres of the Alaskan Arctic. However, despite the oil industry's complaints about Biden's policies, the United States is now producing more oil than any country ever has. Pumping nearly 13 million barrels per day on average last year. ExxonMobil and Chevron, the largest US energy companies, reported their biggest annual profits in a decade last year. And while we happen to be the largest and top producer of oil and gas here in the United States, we also happen to be the top exporter of those fossil fuels.
Yeah, so Biden should go nuts over this. This is an enormously winning issue. And so he could point out the corruption of Donald Trump. He could point out that Donald Trump's gonna burn the planet to get his bribes. And by the way, that polls really well with younger voters where Biden needs a lot of help. And he could go the extra mile and say, look, you know what? I'm increasing the royalties that the oil companies have to pay for American oil. That is American people's money. And you know what those subsidies, what the hell are they getting subsidies for? They've been around hundreds of years, they don't need subsidies. They're the most profitable companies in the world. What are we giving them $20 billion a year of taxpayer money for? That would be incredibly popular. He won't do any of it. And then you're gonna tear your hair out, but Cenk, those are actually pretty good ideas. That's a constructive critique. Why wouldn't he do it? Well, number one, because he's corrupt. So he's never ever gonna talk about Donald Trump's corruption. Last time around, Donald Trump took $100 million from just one guy, Sheldon Adelson. Biden and his team never mentioned it, even though it was brazen, out of control bribery and corruption. Why? Because they take money from the same sets of people, right? So like if you're watching this show and you're not familiar with us, you're thinking, which side are we on? We're on the side of the truth. So Biden takes giant gobs of money and delivers for these corporations. So Trump does it in a dumber way. But is there a policy difference? There actually is. So Biden added 100 regulations. They're not overly burdensome regulations. They're regulations meant to protect you and the planet. They were actually really good. I give him credit for that. Donald Trump took away 125 regulations and started drilling everywhere. And climate change is an existential issue, etc. On the other hand, as Anna pointed out, Biden has broken records for how much drilling we've done in America. Mm-hmm. Record amount of oil production of any president of any country ever, right? So it's not like the oil companies didn't give him money. It's not like he didn't deliver for them as well. Yes, his policies are better than Trump's, significantly better than Trump's, and he's at least helping a little bit on climate change. But with the other hand, he's also feeding those same oil executives. In fact, the meeting started with one of the oil executives saying, we spent $400 million lobbying Biden and the Democrats.
Yeah.
And they haven't given us 100% of what we wanted. He didn't say 100%, but he said they haven't given us everything we wanted.
Right.
Because their assumption is, I bribe you, you give me everything I want.
Exactly.
And so Biden doesn't. He gives them 80% of what they want. I don't know what the correct number is, but it's in that ballpark. Whereas Trump gives them 200% of what they want.
All right, well, we gotta take a break. When we come back for the second hour of the show, we'll talk a little bit about how some of these red states that have basically banned abortion are missing out on the worker or workforce talent pool. Because young people not interested in living in those states or working in those states. And we'll give you those numbers when we come back.